Everybody knows the deal is rotten. Old Black Joe still picking cotton for your ribbons and bows. Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost.
Welcome to the Lifeboat Hour, September 28, 2014. The last Lifeboat Hour of the month of September. Summer is gone and we're moving into October in just a few days. Thank you all for tuning in tonight and for your emails and Facebook posts regarding last week's show with Dr. Linda Bender. Remember that since we are no longer a live show and aren't taking callers anymore, you can ask a question or leave a comment for me at my Facebook page or at my website, carolynbaker.net. I'm always eager to hear with you. Something else that I'm eager about is the release of Extinction Dialogues, Living with Death in Mind, written by myself and Guy McPherson. We're at a drum roll juncture for the release of this book, which should be happening in a few days. You can order the book at my website, carolynbaker.net, or at the publisher's website, tayenlane.com. That's spelled T-A-Y-E-N-L-A-N-E.com. I also want to take a couple of minutes to talk about a very special event happening in February 2015. My friends Gary Stamper, Anya McAndrews, and myself are going to be facilitating a fabulous tour of sacred places in the Yucatan Peninsula for about 8 days. This is a rare opportunity to visit the sacred sites and ancient ruins of a culture that reached a pinnacle of vibrant creativity and then collapsed, leaving behind a legacy of wisdom, beauty, and intimate connection with nature. On this journey, we will have the opportunity to immerse ourselves in Mayan culture and have relaxed conversations with Mayan elders. But it won't be all about learning and exploration. We will play and relax and savor the beauty around us. It'll be a lovely opportunity to connect with kindred souls and restore our own. Since we created this tour, we've also created a new pricing option, and you'll find those options at my website, carolynbaker.net, or on my Facebook page or at a special Facebook page entitled The Yucatan Sacred Sites Tour 2015. Yucatan is spelled Y-U-C-A-T-A-N. We want you to join us and share this beautiful experience with us, so please check out the Yucatan Sacred Sites Tour 2015 on Facebook or visit my website, carolynbaker.net. So tonight we have with us a man whose passion and energy for activism grounded in the sacred is absolutely stunning. Perhaps you aren't familiar with the term sacred activism, but it was coined by my friend and our guest's friend, Andrew Harvey, who was on this show last month. It has nothing to do with religion or dogma, but rather with deep connection with nature, with each other, and with our own sacred core. My guest tonight, Chris Sod, is the author of Second Wave Spirituality, Passion for Justice, Passion for Peace. Chris was born in Lebanon and experienced firsthand the devastation of the Lebanese War, where he was involved in peace work. His peace-building involvement led him to develop a great respect for diversity and a passion for peace and justice. He and his wife, Jessie, co-direct the Olive Branch Center in Charlotte, North Carolina, and they teach courses on socially engaged spirituality, and the mysticism of personal authenticity and inclusion. Chris is also the founder of the Institute for Life Leadership and Coaching, where he's led more than 200 psychological and spiritual retreats for heart-centered living. He and Jessie live in Charlotte, and his website is www.theolivebranch.net. Welcome to the Lifeboat Hour, Chris.
Thank you. It's great to be with you, Carolyn.
Chris, you know, many of our listeners do not particularly relate to the word spiritual, or they might associate it with religion. And I'd like you to explain how you define spirituality and clarify how we can be non-religious, even atheist, and still appreciate spirituality and develop a spiritual path.
Definitely. I mean, for me, the word spirituality at its core is about spirit. It's about discovering that in us there is a powerful life spirit that inhabits us, that there is a life force, there is a presence of love, a presence of strength, a presence of heart. And some people will live that spirit through their belief systems, if they are religious or philosophical or psychological. We experience the power and the presence of spirit in different ways. And you know, one person that's coming to mind as we talk about spirituality that doesn't necessarily include the belief in God is Stefan Hessel in France, who just died a couple of years ago. Stefan Hessel came from a Jewish tradition, but he defined himself as a humanist. And not necessarily as a believing person, but as a humanist.
Right.
But he was so involved and calling us so much to get engaged. He just passed away at the age of 94, but his one of his latest books was Get Engaged. Mm-hmm. And he would say, I am spiritual from a humanistic perspective.
Right. Well, right now, Chris, we're experiencing a huge global crisis, and yeah. I don't think we've been this close to world war for a very long time, and I don't need to remind any of us that catastrophic climate change is catapulting us toward near-term extinction. And as you know, my work in the past 7 years has been focused on emotional and spiritual preparation for navigating these very turbulent times. In the midst of this, you argue that an evolutionary change is happening, and you insist that it's happening in our understanding of love. I'm not quite clear what you mean by this, and I'd love it if you would take plenty of time to elaborate on this.
Thank you. Well, first I want to say that, you know, your book, Collapsing Consciously, has been so important for me, for the people I work with, for telling us about so clearly about us coming toward an end of an era and an end of a civilization and how dire and dangerous the times that we live in today.
Yes. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Sure, sure. And at the same time, these are times that are creating unbelievable possibilities for individuals to delve deeper into their own authenticity, their own sense of beingness and aliveness. It is very paradoxical. But the breaking of many of the shells that have imprisoned our spirit is giving us an opportunity to free the heart, to free our authentic nature, and to participate in an evolution of mind and an evolution of intelligence. And a big part of that is that shift in our understanding of love. You know, one way our understanding of love is evolving and shifting is going from a personalized understanding of love. You know, love we have for our children, love we have for our family, love we have for our dogs or the animals that are in our life, maybe for our community, which is all very important. But there is a huge shift there into an understanding of love as an unbounded life force that cannot be limited to the personal and cannot be personalized. That love is a force, like Teilhard de Chardin used to say, it is the force that has created the whole universe. And that by inviting love in our life, we are inviting something very unbounded, something very unlimited, something very eternal. And that is the same love that we have for our mate or our romantic partner, that we would have for the earth, for example, that we would have for the children who are hungry, or for the foreigners that are mistreated, and so forth. So there is that opening up and understanding that love cannot be caged in. Also, it is our understanding that love is about the pursuit of justice, that love is about solidarity, that love is about inclusion. And, you know, a parent that is involved in raising a child knows that about their children. If their children are treated unjustly, whatever their belief system are, they will go and stand up for that child to restore justice for that child. If that child is suffering, they'll be in solidarity with that child. So the whole idea of justice and inclusion and solidarity is intrinsic to the idea of love, but we have limited it too much to a personal level. And now we are realizing that this love is the pursuit of justice and the care of the earth on a global level. Also, one more thing about love and the evolution shift in our understanding of love is the question of where does love come from? And we have come to understand more and more that love springs from a freed heart, a heart that has been freed, and from a spirit that has been allowed to live the authenticity of who they are. That the more we free our heart, the more we reclaim our authenticity, the more we are able to love. And for a long time, authenticity has been shamed by religious system and definitely by political systems, that we cannot trust our heart, we cannot trust who we are, we cannot trust our nature, we judge our own beingness. There is a great deal of self-hate that we have integrated because of what we have been taught by systems of domination. So this is shifting for us. We are understanding the liberating power of love and the ability for love to strengthen us and give us the power and the joy in this great time of crisis, the power and the joy to hold our own grief as sacred and to see our grief as the womb of some higher creativity that is coming to us, even in dire, dire, dire times.
Well, you know, I really love your redefinition of love from just an emotion to this hugely inclusive concept that includes justice and peace and activism. And also, as you probably know, I do a lot of work and have had a lot of people on this show talking about grief, because yes, I see grief as a huge catalyst for consciousness transformation. And a lot of people look at where we are right now and they just throw up their hands and they say, well, screw it, how many days till I leave the planet, you know?
Right.
And, you know, as you said, this is paradoxical, because at this time of incredible turbulence and, you know, frightening events, there is this incredible transformation going on that is so paradoxical. But in a time of endings, there are always, whether it's the ending of a personal life or the ending of a country or the ending of a civilization, there are always these opportunities for transformation.
So much so. I mean, we know it on an individual level. Children who have known great suffering, for example, growing up in an abusive family, that abuse, which create great grief in them, will either destroy them or ennoble their spirit to the highest level. Grief opens our heart. Grief breaks the shells that have suffocated our heart.
Yes.
And gives us a whole new perception of life. Now, if we are not able to hold grief intentionally and to realize the beauty and the sacredness of grief, then that grief can drown us and make us cynical and make us continue the abuse that we have received and continue joining the forces that are destroying the earth and destroying our democracy.
Yes.
On the other hand, grief can liberate us to descend into such a wider, larger, fuller understanding of our own nature and who we are as human being and the power that we carry and the immense propensity of love that we have. And grief also frees us to go back and claim our own authenticity and our own nature. I mean, you know, when we suffer, there is a liberating aspect to that, because in a sense we don't care anymore. We don't care about all these rules and regulations and patriarchy and domination and all of that. It brings us back to the basic national reality of wanting to embody, to incarnate who we are at a heart level. So the ability, the opportunity that grief offers us for transformation is humongous. And that's why grief is the twin sister of joy, and grief is the door to the temple of the heart.
Absolutely. And, you know, you talk about the first wave of spirituality and the second wave. And I notice that you have an entire chapter in your book on 14 characteristics essential to second wave spirituality. Would you explain to us what the two waves are, how they're different, and why we need a second wave?
Sure, sure. You know, as most of us know, in the 70s and in the 80s, there was a big spiritual awakening movement happening, especially in the Western world, especially in America, but that has spread all over the world. It was a spontaneous kind of movement, and that's what I call first wave spirituality, that achieved many great results. And among them was to get rid of the image of God as, or the sacred or the holy as something judgmental and something condemning us and something that joins in the whole fallacy of domination and control. So they rejected that image of the divine, and they saw the divine, they wanted to recuperate the image of the divine as loving, as a friend of our soul. And that was a great achievement. And the other achievement is that they told us that the divine, however we define the divine or the sacred or that otherness, that great otherness, lives in us, that it's not outside of us in big church buildings or big mosques or big temples, but that it is in every one of us. And that was another wonderful gift of that. And they also opened up a lot to diversity, accepting the different religions as different paths, including philosophies as different paths to enlightenment, and that they were all okay, basically. However, that first wave of spirituality could not liberate itself from the separation of spirit and body and the separation of the call to awaken within ourselves from the call to take responsibility for our earth and for the struggle of the people and the animals of the earth for greater justice. So that divide remained. And a lot of people who did quote-unquote spiritual work retreated into themselves and were tempted to personalize that journey of theirs. So they were not very involved in human rights activities, not very involved in defending animals, in being activists for peace and justice, or even in realizing what is happening in the world and that we have a responsibility to the dire challenges of our world today. Second wave spirituality started really about maybe 20 years ago. We started seeing a shift, and the shift was mainly in the way we think about spirituality. We started seeing a lot of writers and authors and teachers and speakers starting to talk about our belonging to the earth, our responsibility toward the earth, our oneness, not only as an etheric oneness, you know, you and I are one, but we're one in some way we cannot define, but oneness as solidarity, meaning realizing that everyone who suffers, part of me suffers because we are one. Therefore, I am in solidarity for the children, for example, today in the Middle East that are paying this high casualty of the madness happening there.
Yeah.
That second wave spirituality brought us to be in solidarity with the earth, with the animals, with the suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And it bridged that gap and brought it all together. And we started seeing millions from every tradition, religion, philosophy, putting their hands on the plow and starting to get involved. Not enough people, but a lot of people so far.
Right. Well, Chris, in a moment, we're going to hear a song that was composed and written by a close friend of yours, Barry Sherman.
Yes,
can you tell us briefly about the song before we hear it?
That is the song on sacred activism, is that correct?
Yes,
yes,
an anthem
yes.
for sacred activism.
Yes, yes. So Barry Sherman is a wonderful spiritual activist. He is he works at a school as a counselor and does a lot with the children in teaching them the great vision of activism through songs and poetry and things like that. And he also was the assistant director at the Institute for Life Leadership and Coaching with me, and a very good friend of Andrew. So Andrew Harvey and I asked him to write a song about sacred activism, and he wrote that beautiful song and is performing it in many, many places.
Well, let's listen to this amazing song, an anthem for sacred activism. Listen closely to the lyrics. This is Barry Sherman.
The great death is all around us and it's undeniable. We're in a dark night of the soul and everybody's liable. Fundamentalism's on the rise. We're living ever more hectic, superficial lives. And let us not forget about the massive population explosion. Our current way of life is not sustainable. This, my friends, is a fact and simply not debatable. The ecological holocaust. Every day 120 more species lost as our techno-addictions turn the world into an asphalt graveyard. Look to the horizon, see the phoenix as she's rising. Through the birth canal of death, new life is born. From the darkness of our vanity, we can dawn a new humanity. Like the trampled, sobbing grapes transformed to wine. We're at a critical tipping point. We've got to make a decision. Do we continue our shameful ways or do we claim a new vision? Weapons of mass destruction abound as the corporate crazed media dumbs us down. Yeah, when you look into the eyes of our children, what you gonna say? America, please wake up from your stupor of denial. The shadow of your greatness causes you to be reviled. Got to pop your egotistical bubble and be a humble partner in this epic struggle and stop living in this global war zone dressed for cocktails. Look to the horizon, see the phoenix as she's rising. Through the birth canal of death, new life is born. From the darkness of our vanity, we can dawn a new humanity, like the trampled, sobbing grapes transformed to wine. Two fires of passion burn eternal in the human heart. And to kindle both flames is a vital and sacred art. The mystic's passion for divinity, we must embrace with devout affinity, and then fuse this passion with the activist's hunger for justice. Well, there's a movement on the rise like none we've ever seen before. It's the hope that can break down walls and open up new doors. Let's come together and be a part of this. Let's become a global band of catalysts. And when they ask us who we are, we will say, we are the sacred activists. We're gonna live in a passionate fashion with divine love and wisdom and action. We're gonna sanctify the great death and watch the phoenix rise. We're gonna break the chains of this insanity. We're gonna dawn a new humanity. And when they ask us who we are, we will say, we are the sacred activists. We are the sacred activists. We are the sacred activists. We're gonna live in a passionate fashion with divine love and wisdom in action. We're gonna sanctify the great death and watch the phoenix rise. We're gonna break the chains of this insanity. We're gonna dawn a new humanity. And when they ask us who we are, we will say, we are the sacred activists. We are the sacred activists. Oh yeah, we are the sacred activists.
That was the anthem for sacred activism by Barry Sherman, and this is the Lifeboat Hour. I'm your host, Carolyn Baker, and we're talking with Chris Sodd, author of Second Wave Spirituality, Passion for Peace, Passion for Justice. Chris, please tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you.
They can get in touch with me by going to the website of the Olive Branch Center, which is www.theolivebranchcenter.net, or they could email me at chris@theolivebranchcenter.net.
Thank you.
And I will be glad to speak with whoever would like to connect.
Okay, thanks. Moving forward, you note that in the second wave of spirituality, there is a flowering of the feminine in spiritual thinking and living. And I'd love to hear you say more about this. One of my favorite quotes in the book is on page 71, where you say, without the sacred feminine, the masculine deteriorates into a rigid and frozen narrowness of perspective. Without the feminine intuition, we forget our sense of oneness with the earth and all beings. We lose our compassion for those who are bearing the burden of our inequality of opportunities. Our spirituality becomes overly detached and self-absorbed. So please say more about that.
Oh, my God, Carolyn, there's so much to be said.
I know.
I mean, it is, from my perspective, we owe so much, and I will say about the feminine, but I want to speak about women like yourself, woman leader and woman teachers in the spiritual world and the activist world, how much we owe to the women who have taught us to come back to the body, to come back to intuition, to come back to what is not natural in us, to come back to the earth. I mean, we owe immensely in our thinking to that. And regarding the feminine, I mean, I can speak, let me start by speaking as a man. I mean, without that feminine sensitivity to relationship, to our connectivity with others, to the heart, to the compassion of the heart, to the need that I have as an individual for community and for the world itself, that I am not an isolated being. Without all of that, as a man, and then I'll speak about the masculine, but as a man, I would be cut off totally from anything that is worth living for, because
right.
I will become an automaton, just thinking in a very narrow way, doing what I have to do, and then getting drunk after I do what I have to do and going on without the sensitivity that the feminine brings to the masculine. Now, going beyond men and women and speaking about these two powerful energies of the feminine and the masculine, my God, it is in their union that we have a chance to embrace our humanity and become human and become proud to be human. And where we see the beauty of humanity, don't we? I mean, it is when these two come together that we see the full human bloom where strength and clear thinking is married to compassion, to tenderness, to care, to connectivity, and we have not a split vision of humanity, but a full vision of humanity. You know, for those who have seen, I don't know if you have seen it, Carolyn, but the movie Divergent that just came out, you know, a couple of months ago, shows that beautifully, how when you split humanity into separate pieces, then you are able to control people and you are able to subdue their spirit. But once they reclaim the fullness of their spirit, then nothing can stop them anymore.
Divergent is on my viewing list, so I'll see it soon.
I highly recommend it. But it's a movie that will shake people. Yeah. It raises a lot of questions, but it's a very powerful, I think, depiction of how we control people by cutting them down into pieces and separating themselves from their own spirit. Full spirit.
Well, we did talk about grief a moment ago, but you have a chapter on the implications of second wave spirituality for the individual. And one of my favorite quotes in that chapter is, "Keep your heart open at any cost. Grief will break your heart open. Visions of ecstatic beauty will also open your heart. Allow grief and beauty to expand your heart." This is such an important aspect of my work as well, the way in which grief and beauty travel together and must travel together. So please say more about this chapter and anything else you'd like to say about this quote.
Thank you. Well, for me, beauty is ultimately about what is real.
Mm.
What is real is beautiful, not what is manufactured, but what is real. The beauty of our body is in the reality of our bodies. Every person that really embodies their body is embodies their body, that lives their body and holds it with pride, is incredibly beautiful. When we are able to look at the real and see the real, the authentic in ourselves, the authentic in others, the authentic in the earth, the authentic in art, we see beauty. But to be able to see the real, we must have our heart broken open. We must liberate ourselves from all the conditioning that we have had around what is right and what is correct and what is true and what is the real religious path and the real spiritual path and the real this and the real that. Again, systems that are mixed with a lot of domination and a lot of control, and be able to come back to what is really natural. And that is the great role of grief in our world, because, I mean, reading your book, for example, that guides us through these horrendous, challenging time, I had tears reading the book. I have tears thinking about what is happening in our world, as many, many people do. But these tears bring us to see, to have the courage to look and see what is real. And by doing that, not only does our compassion extend, but strength grows in us. And Carol and I experienced that when I went through the war in Lebanon, and my family and I lost everything we had, lost, you know, being raised Christian in that part of the world, and we lost home and land, and friends died, and so forth. Mm. And it was a very sad moment. And I was involved in peace work, but so much suffering. But at the same time, what I experienced by allowing myself to look at the real and to grieve the real, I saw the amazing beauty of life, the amazing beauty of life. And like you say so powerfully, grief and beauty come together, because grief is about truth. And I would say grief, joy, and beauty come together. I mean, joy and ecstasy are also part of our journey. And hopefully we will go through this great challenge dancing. Dancing with ecstasy, because ecstasy is not conditioned by what is happening or not happening. It is brought about by realizing that life lives fully in us, and passion lives fully in us if we allow it to free itself through our own authenticity. And that could be being successful, or could be dying. But then we die in our authenticity, we fail in our authenticity, we succeed in our authenticity, but we are present to the truth of who we are. And there is immense beauty, immense ecstasy, but there's also grief.
And at this point, we need to listen to Holly Near singing a lovely fantasy song called
Great.
I'm Bound by the Beauty. Let's listen.
Oh, awesome.
I'm coming back in 500 years. First thing I'm going to do when I get back here is to see these things I love, and they'd better be here. First, I'm gonna find a forest and stand there in the trees and kiss the fragrant forest floor and lie down in the leaves and lay. Everything the earthless, everything the verdant.
Song.
Yeah, that was Holly Near singing I'm Bound by the Beauty, and this is the Lifeboat Hour. I'm Carolyn Baker, and my guest is Chris Sodd, author of Second Wave Spirituality, Passion for Peace, Passion for Justice, and co-director of the Olive Branch Center in Charlotte, North Carolina. His website is theolivebranchcenter.net, and you can contact him there and learn much more about his work. So, Chris, back in April, I wrote an article which was widely circulated online and was published by Shift Network, an organization which you've worked with and which Andrew Harvey has worked with extensively. And in that article, I talked about the ego-based heroic spirit. By that, I mean the heroic notion that my activism must succeed and that I'm in charge of where it leads. The title of my article was When Surrender Means Not Giving Up, The New Sacred Activism. And I was writing specifically in relation to catastrophic climate change and in relation to the ego-based heroic spirit. I'd like to quote exactly what I said because I'd like to hear your thoughts about this. So here's what I said, and it's a bit lengthy, but please bear with me. I said, as we confront catastrophic climate change, which is likely to result in near-term human extinction, we must ask if we are willing to put love in action, even if we don't survive. Can we move beyond a triumphalist agenda? Accepting the possibility of near-term extinction is an agony, but an agony that liberates the spiritual warrior in the powers of truth and love in order to discover the diamond hidden in the darkness that cannot be discovered in relentless fighting in order to overcome. The diamond can only be acquired by surrendering the need for anyone or anything to survive, even oneself. In the words of Andrew Harvey, this is a glorious and terrible adventure, but it is the antidote to despair. What we need now is not heroic victory, but again, in Andrew's words, an astringent maturity, an entirely new level of adulthood that acts in ways that bring forth optimum joy, optimum healing, and optimum beauty, which will leave seeds for whatever life might remain as most species on the planet face their demise. The sacred inspiration we require results not from false hope or finding solutions, but from a state of active being in which we voluntarily enroll in radical psychological and spiritual training. And if we haven't registered for the psycho-spiritual apprenticeship, then we will persevere in our triumphalist agenda and inadvertently perpetuate despair. That's the end of the quote from the article, and in your book, you talk about the heroic spirit, and on page 72, you distinguish between the authentic heroic spirit and the heroic spirit based in ego. Would you clarify this for us, especially in the light of what I wrote in my article?
Yes, very much so. This is a subject very dear to my heart. And I fully resonate with what you have wrote and what Andrew has said. I think, as we all know, there is a huge distinction between the hero, what you call the ego hero, or the hero born out of the fallacy of domination and control and patriarchy that is about controlling results and being in charge and being controlled and dominating over others and dominating circumstances and so forth. And the ego of spirit, the hero of the heart or the hero of the spirit, that is about giving oneself fully and passionately to the love of life, to the dance for life, to the work for justice, to the work for the earth, without needing to be bound by results. But what drives the hero of the heart is the courage to manifest the love that they are carrying even in the darkest hours. But for me, it is a hero of the spirit, in the sense that Joseph Campbell spoke about the hero, the old mythic power in us to summon courage, to summon love, to summon passion, to summon tenacity, to summon commitment, but not to control, but to manifest, to give it fully. So at the time where we have to leave, when we have to end our story, whatever the story is, we can say we have given it all. We have loved fully. We have loved passionately. That is a heroic spirit, but that is the real heroic spirit. And I want to give you two quick examples, if I may.
Sure.
One, for example, is my friend Mandy Epley, who is a psychotherapist, very successful psychotherapist in Charlotte, that cut down a lot of her practice to go with two women. One of them was Cindy and Elizabeth, and Elizabeth was a a war widow from Afghanistan, and they came together and out of nothing built a center called the Respite for Grief and Hope, where they're helping people develop vision of transformation, ecological and justice-bound, out of their grief. That, for me, is an amazing heroic spirit. The other example is the Australian woman who 20 years ago goes to Iraq and adopts not one, but two children with no limbs at all, no legs and no hands, and raises them to become beautiful young men that are facing life with no limbs, yet with passion. And one of them sang at the at the Star Show, I think it was called the X Factor in England, and I mean, people were crying all around. And I think that mother and her two sons showed what the hero of spirit was. They were not controlling anything or bound by results, but they were bound by manifesting that spirit, even with no limbs.
That is such an amazing, beautiful story. And I want to jump ahead here just a second, because we're sort of coming down to our last minutes.
Sure.
But there's another quote from Andrew, which you have in your book on page 258, and I'm going to read in a moment. And this is what it says. The great problem at the moment is that we're going through a tumultuous and terrifying and turbulent transformation for which most people are totally unprepared, which means that the suffering could potentially not lead to discovery of inner communion with all things and inner magnificence, but to yet another and potentially lethal choice of authoritarianism or fascism, and this is really where the human race is. So what is needed now is for people to model how suffering transfigures into sacred activism.
Yes.
And to live magnificently for love and harmony, because if a great many of us don't model this transfiguration, those who are disempowered now, who haven't built a container, will be enormously seduced by the false voices of false power. And so this is another huge reason for the cultivation of consciousness transformation and translating it into sacred activism, as we confront an enormous and compelling trend toward the far right on the political spectrum, which manifests as an ever-widening gap between rich and poor, endless escalating wars, climate chaos, and what amounts to the murder of the planet, and growing repression and surveillance of innocent civilians in many industrial nations. I'd really like you to comment on this.
Wow. I mean, it is exactly that. It is about modeling how we can, in this crisis, in this amazing, devastating crisis, where the madness of fanaticism and the madness of domination are going full speed, that we can, on the other side of the spectrum, like you said so beautifully, show what it means in the middle of the crisis to mine the challenge of the crisis, to be able to grow our spirit and to liberate our spirit. You know, I mean, this is something very, very close to my heart and mind, that, you know, we have been taught self-hate for a long time by many organized religion and organized political system. To be able to break out of that self-hate and to reclaim the dignity and the beauty of our humanity, of who we are as we are, and then mentor, like you said, what it means to live out of the passion of love and love in action, and to live fully. And at that moment, it doesn't matter anymore what is tomorrow. What matters is that today we are manifesting the full ecstasy of existence in service of the planet, in service of the poorest among us, in service of the children who are hungry, and in service of the animals that are violated. But the focus becomes on that manifestation, not on controlling results or being bound by results or being enslaved by results. Results will be whatever they'll be. It's decided by forces that have 14 billion years of history behind us, of evolution. So that's not our role. Our role is to fully, passionately burn like a candle and enjoy the burning of that love as a candle.
You know, That's stated so beautifully. I thank you for that, Chris. And, you know, part of my work, and I'm sure your work as well, and I know Andrew's work, is, as he says, creating this kind of container so that people can hold. That's what a container does. It holds.
Right.
So
right.
People can hold all that is happening without being completely melted down by it.
Yes.
And I really believe that this is why so many people can't even begin to hear even the slightest information about, you know, our planetary predicament, because they don't have that container to help them hold this. And,
yes.
You know, the spiritual and the emotional preparation is what provides the strong container. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes. Totally, totally. And I think a lot of people are already so exhausted by a depression of their spirit that they cannot hold anything more. I mean, the self-hate that we have learned about, the distrust of our humanity, the cowing to powers that use us has exhausted the spirit. So when people reclaim their authenticity and reclaim the truth of their spirit and of their body and of their heart, that container becomes stronger. And then we realize then that we don't have to be, we don't have to drown in strong waves. We can learn to surf them, and do the best we can with them. But let these waves take us to a higher experience of our own lives and of our own love. Yeah, that idea of the container is tremendously important. But I do think that we have to build that container. We have to overcome the depression of spirit that has plagued us for so long, that heavy, shackled, weighted sense of the individual who's disconnected from the earth, but also disconnected from their own nature, from what is natural in them.
And your work and my work is really all about helping people build that container.
Yes.
And I'd like you to say just a little bit, because we have a little bit of extra time here, I'd like you to say a little bit about your leadership and life coaching training.
Well, I've been leading, I don't know, over several hundred retreats in the last 20 years, and it's about helping people, supporting people in building that container, like you so beautifully say it, and by doing, basically, if I want to summarize it, three things. One is, like Waldo Emerson says so beautifully, learn to obey your heart.
Mm.
By learning to enter in a relationship with their own heart and to really listen to their heart and give a priority and a primacy to their heart, to become men, women and men of heart.
Mm.
Second, it is by freeing the authenticity of their spirit, starting to trust their intuition, trust their likes, but trust their dislikes too, trust their fear, trust their joy, trust their grief, trust their anger, trust their outrage, trust their body, trust everything in their body. It's like going home to that authenticity of who we are and stop shaming it, rather seeing the power of the authentic and realizing that when we become authentic, we are very partial. None of us is everything. So the more I descend into my own authenticity, the more I realize I need Carolyn Baker to do her work because I cannot do her work. I can become powerful, but powerful in my own partiality, and that is all what I need to manifest the divine. And third is that awareness of our belonging, our deep, intimate belonging with the natural, with the natural world, with the trees and the mountains and the rivers and the animals, that we belong, not only we emotionally belong, we ourselves are interconnected, that the rape of the earth that is happening today at supra-destructive level is the rape of our own body and the rape of our own psyche. So we can feel that outrage and we can mine the outrage to stand for justice wherever we can stand for justice, to stand for that child that is suffering or for that animal that is suffering, wherever we as individuals can do that, and joining hands with the millions in the world today who are doing it and building nonprofits and showing up in that moment of crisis. So the work around coaching, Carolyn, came from my experience as a psychotherapist, where I worked with depression for a long, long time as a psychotherapist. And I realized, and I think what a lot of people are starting to realize, that we cannot come out of depression if we stay in our limited sense of who we are. That depression, the healing of depression is passion, ultimately.
Absolutely.
And passion is connected with the earth, with the history of our humanity, with evolution, with everything. As long as we are disconnected, we are flirting with heavy depression or with the dangers of depression.
Yeah.
But when we reconnect with the spirit of Mother Teresa and Gandhi and Martin Luther King and Aung San Suu Kyi of Burma and so on, in our own way, in our own limited little place called where we live and what we do, but then we are like Jesus or like Mary, we are connected to forces that are magnificently powerful and magnificently loving, and we can rise up of that depression and find the joy of being who I am, whatever my destiny is, whatever my destiny is, to recover that. So that has been the work around the Institute, is to prepare leaders to be able to understand the psychology of authenticity, the psychology of the heart, and the psychology and spirituality of justice and ecological sustainability.
Well, I would like you to tell our listeners one more time how to get in contact with you, Chris.
Sure. So if you want to email me directly, it's at chris@theolivebranchcenter.net. Or you can go to the website, which is www.theolivebranchcenter.net. And if you want to check out the Institute for Life Leadership and Coaching, if you go to the Olive Branch, it will give you a connection there to the Institute. And the website of the Institute is simple. It's www.theilc.org.
Well, you know, as a life coach myself, I am constantly encountering people who are just having a great deal of difficulty with things like, you know, navigating this whole situation, and they're waking up, but it's very difficult, and they need a lot of support and direction,
sure.
And I'm sure you encounter that as well. We
sure.
have just
sure.
about a minute left. And I want everyone to read Second Wave Spirituality, Passion for Peace, Passion for Justice, as we all confront these daunting times in which sacred activism must be the only game in town. Thank you so much, Chris Saad, for being our guest on the Lifeboat Hour.
Thank you, Carolyn, and thank you for all the beautiful and important work you do.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye, then.
Everybody knows you've been faithful, give or take a night or two. Everybody knows you've been discreet, but there were so many people you just had to meet without your clothes. Everybody knows. Everybody.